And we're going to turn to Genesis chapter 42. Genesis 42. And before we read the passage and begin our journey through it, let me just say we're launching into a slightly new, a new phase of Joseph's life, or a new section of what we're going to see. We've watched as Joseph has had dreams and then been betrayed by his family, sold into slavery, how he's been lied about, thrown into prison, and then he was taken from the prison and raised up to be second in command in Egypt. And last time we saw Joseph, he was busy. Remember what he was doing? Saving the world. That's what he was doing. The whole world came to Joseph. This is the last verse of chapter 41. The whole world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe everywhere. So Joseph has gone on this wild ride of betrayal to then being raised to this position where he becomes the savior of the world. Here is Joseph doing what God's people are supposed to do. Do you know what your mission in this world is? If you are a Christian, do you know what your job is? It is to save the world. Now, hang on a second. I know that Jesus has done that. But our job is to join Jesus in the great mission of bringing God's blessing to the world. That's what Joseph was doing. That's what we're supposed to be doing. That's what Jesus is doing. So in many ways, it would be a great place to stop the story. It'd be a great place to finish. Because Joseph has done well. But what we're now going to see is Joseph face perhaps the toughest test that he has faced so far. Remember, he's already experienced betrayal, lying, been thrown in prison. He has already faced the trial of suffering and been faithful. Remember the wasted years we talked about when Joseph could have been doing so much, and yet he was stuck as a slave and then as a prisoner. Wasted years. And yet Joseph continued to trust God and God's plan, even in the darkness of the prison. He trusted God's mysterious ways, that God was working his plan out, even when it all looked a mess. We saw him in the suffering test. And then last time we saw him in the test of success, when everything went really well. Another big trial. How will Joseph, will he succumb to temptation? Will he succumb to Egypt, or will he stay faithful to God? But the test we're going to watch him undergo in the next three chapters, chapters 42, 43, 44, 45, next four chapters, is perhaps the greatest test of all. Because Joseph is going to meet his brothers again. Now, let's just get this clear, right? It has been 20 years since he last saw his brothers. He has had no contact, no word, nothing from them. The last time he saw them, they were taking money in order to sell him into slavery. The last thing he saw was them sitting to eat down, sit down and have a meal as he was dragged off to Egypt. He's had a long time to think. And things have gone well, things are now going well in Egypt, but then suddenly one day, Joseph is confronted with his brothers again. What will he do? And we're going to watch in the next three Sundays, we're going to watch Joseph bring about an extraordinary reconciliation. And Joseph, like he has done all the way through this narrative, he sort of towers over the narrative as this incredible portrait, almost an idealized portrait of what it looks like to be truly human. The one who reconciles. Forgiveness, reconciliation come through Joseph to his brothers. So let's read the passage. And we're going to see there's going to be three stages to this reconciliation. And we're doing the first stage today. So let's read chapter 42 and pick up this incredible story. When Jacob, that's Joseph's dad, when Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you just keep looking at each other?" He continued, "I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us, so that we may live and not die." Then 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain from Egypt. But Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with the others, because he was afraid that harm might come to him. So Israel's sons were among those who went to buy grain, for there was famine in the land of Canaan also. Now Joseph was the governor of the land, the person who sold grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them. But he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. "Where do you come from?" he asked. "From the land of Canaan," they replied, "to buy food." Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Then he remembered his dreams about them and said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see where our land is unprotected." "No, my lord," they answered, "your servants have come to buy food. We are all the sons of one man. Your servants are honest men, not spies." "No," he said to them, "you have come to see where our land is unprotected." But they replied, "Your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father and one is no more." Joseph said to them, "It is just as I told you. You are spies, and this is how you will be tested. As surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of your number to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison so that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you are not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies." And he put them all in custody for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you're honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison while the rest of you go and take grain back for your starving households. But you must bring your youngest brother to me so that your words may be verified and that you may not die." This they proceeded to do. They said to one another, "Surely we are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why this distress has come on us." Reuben replied, "Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood." They did not realize that Joseph could understand them since he was using an interpreter. He turned away from them and began to weep, but then came back and spoke to them again. He had Simeon taken from them and bound before their eyes. Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain, to put each man's silver back in his sack, and to give them provisions for their journey. After this was done for them, they loaded their grain on their donkeys and left. At the place where they stopped for the night, one of them opened his sack to get feed for his donkey, and he saw the silver in the mouth of his sack. "My silver has been returned," he said to his brothers. "Here it is in my sack." Their hearts sank, and they turned to each other trembling and said, "What is this that God has done to us?" When they came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them. They said, "The man who is lord over the land spoke harshly to us and treated us as though we were spying on the land. But we said to him, 'We are honest men. We are not spies. We were 12 brothers, sons of one father. One is no more, and the younger is now with our father in Canaan.' Then the man who is lord over the land said to us, 'This is how I will know whether you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me and take food for your starving households and go, but bring your youngest brother to me so that I will know that you are not spies but honest men. Then I will give your brother back to you, and you can trade in the land.'" As they were emptying their sacks, there in each man's sack was the pouch of silver. When they and their father saw the money pouches, they were frightened. Their father Jacob said to them, "You have deprived me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, and now you want to take Benjamin. Everything is against me." Then Reuben said to his father, "You may put both of my sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Entrust him to my care, and I will bring him back." But Jacob said, "My son will not go down there with you. His brother is dead, and he's the only one left. If harm comes to him on the journey you are taking, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in sorrow." Here's how this is going to work. There are two big trips down to Egypt. Jacob and his 11 remaining sons are starving. There's a famine. And the first trip is the one that we read about in chapter 42. Next time we'll look at their second journey to Egypt. But on this first trip, what I want to try and show you is that the first stage, or the first thing that Joseph does with his brothers, is he uncovers their guilt. That's the big thing that's going on, I think, in this chapter. Uncovering their guilt. You see, when you first read chapter 42, I don't know about you, how do you think Joseph does in his response? It's funny, isn't it? Because I guess some of us would imagine that if Joseph really had forgiven them and really loved them and really wanted to reconcile with them, as soon as they walked in, he'd take off his Egyptian stuff and go, it's me. And yet he doesn't. In fact, he speaks harshly to them. He accuses them of stuff. Then he takes them prisoner and then he sends them home. And surely there's a part of you, isn't there, that goes, well, that doesn't sound very kind. Is that really how you're supposed to deal with this? Well, I think it's really important for us to see that there are some clues that Joseph is not seeking revenge. Joseph is not seeking retaliation. Look, how would you have reacted? Come on. You've had 20 years to stew on all that your brothers did to you. 20 years thinking, if I ever saw you again. 20 years of bitterness rising up within you. 20 years of going over their smug, smirking little faces as they took the grubby little silver and left you as a slave, left you for dead. How would you react? Well, there are some clues that tell us that Joseph's heart is ready to not exact revenge, but to work for reconciliation. First thing, this was last week, I don't remember this. Joseph had two sons. One of them he called Manasseh. And when he called his son Manasseh, he said, "It is because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household." Joseph, through God's grace, has been able to let go of the grudge and the bitterness that he holds towards his brothers. That is why he calls his son Manasseh. He has chosen to forget. That's not easy. And yet that is Joseph's heart posture. And when his brothers come, I don't know if you noticed this, but when his brothers come and they bow down to him, one of the first things we're told is that he remembered his dreams about them. So he's not nursing a bitter grudge, but he is remembering the dream. The dream that the brothers would bow down to him and that he would be raised up. So he is still being controlled, not by bitterness and anger, but by a faith in the promise that God made to him in those dreams. The other place I think you see that what's happening here is Joseph desperately seeking to rebuild the relationship is when they start to talk and he understands them, but they don't understand that he understands them. And it says that he turned away. This is verse 24. He turned away and began to weep. All the way through this story, Joseph keeps breaking down into tears because he so loves and so longs for this to be reconciled. So what we're supposed to see in these chapters is not Joseph playing a game, or not Joseph exacting revenge, but Joseph, the wise man, acting with wisdom to bring true reconciliation. You have to understand that reconciliation is not possible unless sin is truly uncovered. You don't just ignore it. You deal with it. And that is what Joseph is doing with his brothers. So let's go back. I want to try and show you what happens as we walk through this chapter with these brothers. So come back to chapter 42, verse 1. We're going to see three big things. Here's the first big thing. When we go back, okay, so we've watched Joseph saving the world, being what God's people are supposed to be. When you go back to Jacob and his other sons, it's a very different story, isn't it? Here's the first big thing, and that is that God's people are failing to be what they're supposed to be. They're failing to be what God called them to be. So come and look at chapter 42, verse 1. When Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you just keep looking at each other?" Isn't that graphic and poignant? You've got to picture them. Here they are. This family, Jacob and his 11 sons. And what are they doing? They're just looking at each other. They're not doing anything. They're passive. Life is just happening to them. They've got no idea. They've got no vision. They've got no direction. They've got no energy. They're just looking at each other. They're not doing anything. And Jacob, the old man, looks at his sons and says, "What's wrong with you? Why do you just keep looking at each other?" This is the impact of sin in people's lives. This is the impact of sin in the life of God's people. It's been 20 years since they sold their brother into slavery. They all know what they did. They were all there, apart from Benjamin. They were all there. They looked at each other and said, "Shall we sell him?" And they did. And then they lied to their father. They took a goat and they dipped the robe in the goat, and then they lie to their father. And for 20 years, they've kept up this lie, but it has destroyed the family. Now, remember, this family is the family that God has chosen to bring blessing to the whole world. So God said to Abraham, "I will bring blessing through you to all the nations of the world." This is the family of blessing. This is the family who the whole world is supposed to experience God through. And that's what they're for. And yet, here, they are sitting there looking at each other. They're not being what they're supposed to be. They're not bringing blessing like they're supposed to be bringing blessing. Just sitting there. And as I've thought about that this week, and as I've reflected on this, I think I know what they were doing. I think I've experienced something similar. Moments when I know that my heart's not right, moments when I know that I'm living in a way that's not pleasing, moments when I'm choosing to act in ways that aren't right. And what it does is it robs me of joy, it robs me of energy, it robs me of vision, and it robs me of excitement to do what God's called us to do. God's people are supposed to bring the kingdom of God to the world. We're supposed to bring the message of God's forgiveness to the world. We're supposed to bring justice and peace and joy to the world. We're supposed to be the people of freedom, the people who know the God who made us, and through us, the blessing comes to the world. And yet, how often do we just sit and look at each other? What are we doing? And could it be that we have so lost sight of who it is that God's called us to be that we've lost sight of what we're supposed to be doing? So I really want to challenge you this afternoon. Did you see any of that in your life? Do you know, I think there are many, many Christians who live their lives absolutely held back and crippled by sin that they just hide. Sin that they think they can pretend doesn't exist. Sin that they indulge in, or ways of living that they say, I'm just going to go my way, I'm going to live my way. But what it means is that we never really enter into the full reality of what it means to be a Christian. Here's the deal. Jesus came to die on a cross to pay for all of your sin. Jesus came to pay for it all, to bring you forgiveness so that you could have life and life to the full. And yet I think what so often we can be tempted to do is to go, oh, Jesus, thanks, that's really, really nice. And then we carry on in our sin, and we never become the people that God's called us to be. We never fulfill our potential to bring blessing to this world because actually we love sin. Because actually there's stuff in our lives that we love more than him. And so here are these brothers, they just keep looking at each other. And maybe that's your experience. You come to church week after week and you look around, but you're just looking. You're not doing anything. You're not making a difference with your life. You're not investing your life. You're not going for it with Jesus. You're not trying to bring blessing to the world because there's this sin that you feel guilt and shame about. This sin that you love but holds you back. And that is why what Joseph does with his brothers is so gracious and kind. What Jesus wants to do with you is so gracious and kind. If he exposes your sin, if he makes you feel guilty, if he shows you where you're wrong, it's not because he doesn't love you, it's because he wants you to be free. He wants us to live in the full freedom of what he's won for us. Not to live in some inactive, passive thing. I think churches up and down this country are full of people who just look at one another because they've forgotten who they truly are. So let's see what happens. This tragedy of failing to bring about the calling God has called us to. Let's see what happens. Jacob says, why don't you go down and get some grain in Egypt? So 10 of Joseph's brothers go down to Egypt. That's because Benjamin doesn't go. Jacob now doesn't trust his family. Jacob is worried that harm will now come to Benjamin because he doesn't really trust his sons. The whole family is dysfunctional. The whole family has lost any sense of joy and unity and togetherness. And they arrive in Egypt and they bow down to Joseph. Here's a really interesting switch, right? We've got to see this switch. Life is going to come from Egypt, not from Canaan. That should surprise us if you know the Bible story. Egypt's actually a place of slavery, ends up being. But it's not quite that simple. And so God is going to bring the blessing through Egypt to his people. It's very easy to get into these categories of you're the goodies and you're the baddies. We're the goodies and you're the baddies. Not here. The ones who are supposed to be the goodies are the baddies, and the ones who are supposed to be the baddies are the goodies, right? The blessing is to be found with the baddies, not with the goodies. So let's not arrogantly think that somehow we are the superior people who have a superior awesomeness. No, we are people who desperately need God's grace to us. So here they come. They come to Joseph and they bow down. Joseph recognizes them straight away. And yet, he doesn't reveal himself. He's controlled by the dreams. He's controlled by what God has said. And if you remember, what happened in the dream? I saw 11 sheaves of corn bow down and my sheaf standing tall. In this moment, what does Joseph see? He sees 10 brothers, not 11. He's been controlled by the dream. He knows that this can't be the moment because they're not all there. His dream said 11 brothers. And so Joseph is, at this moment, completely controlled by his confidence in what God has promised. So he knows that there is work to do before reconciliation and before this moment can come. And so he says this thing to them, that you're spies. And it's a bit difficult to read, isn't it, what the brothers say? You know, here we are, oh, we're servants, we've come to buy food. We're all the sons of one man, your servants are honest men. Oh, apart from the fact that you have been lying to your father for 20 years. Your whole life is a lie. We're honest men. Really? There is no sense at this point of their own guilt or their own failure. Just this self-delusion that they're honest. I think Joseph knows they're not honest, don't you? Joseph's like, you're not. I know you. And that's why he tests them. This is wisdom. Wisdom as sin is being uncovered. And so then they come back in verse 13. Your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man, there in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no more. There's almost this kind of moment where they dig themselves a hole. Oh, there were 12 of us. Oh, actually, one of them's no more. Huh. Awkward. Let's not talk about that. And all the time, Joseph is listening to this. And Joseph says, no, you're spies. And this is how I'll know that you're spies. You go get your younger brother. And if you've got a younger brother, you go get him, bring him back. I'll keep you all in prison. Right now, here's the reaction. This is the second big thing I want us to see. Sin keeps us from failing to be what God has called us to be. Here's the second big thing. Can we have the second big thing? These brothers are still haunted by memories of the past. They carry with them a burden of guilt. So listen to what happens. On the third day, Joseph said to them, on the third day, come on, we've seen that before, right? This is the day of testing. This is the day when truth is revealed, when things are shown to be what they truly are. So the third day, the day of showingness. Joseph said to them, do this and you will live. But I fear God. If you're honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison. He says, first he says, I'm going to bind all of you. Now he says, I'm going to bind just one of you. One taken on behalf of the many, and you take money and food back to your family so that they may live. Now look at their reaction, verse 21. They said to one another, surely we are being punished. Isn't that interesting? They know what's happening. Surely we are being punished because of our brother. They haven't forgotten. It eats away at them every moment of every day. Surely we're being punished. As soon as things go wrong, as soon as there's opposition, we're being punished. And then listen to how vivid it is. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why this distress has come on us. We don't read about Joseph pleading back in chapter 37. We're not told that detail. We're only told that here. Joseph's brothers remember the sound of his voice pleading with them. Please don't do this. Please let me live. Please don't sell me. Please don't abandon me. Please don't leave me alone. They can hear it day after day, over and over. It calls out to them. And they've tried to bury it, right? You know what? You know how human beings always react to sin, always react to when we've done wrong? We hide. We bury it. The first human reaction to sin when the first human being sinned against God was to cover themselves. We cover up, we hide. We seek to hide what we've done and bury it because we think that is the way to deal with sin. We think the way to deal with wrong is to pretend it's never happened, to put it in the past, to forget about it. But you know as well as I do that some things just don't stay in the past. They go over and over in our minds. They come back and they haunt us. They gnaw away at us. And they stop us from being what God has called us to be to this world. At this point, Reuben helpfully pipes up, doesn't he? Hello, Reuben. Didn't I tell you? Not to sin against the boy, but you wouldn't listen. Well, actually, Reuben, you were a coward and you didn't stop them, is actually what happened. But now look what he says. Now we must give an accounting for his blood. Oh no, this is all sorts of links to Genesis, right? This goes back all over the place in Genesis. This goes back to two other brothers, Cain and Abel. The first two brothers who ever existed. Cain killed his brother Abel, and then God said to him, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Then in Genesis 9, we get this idea that if you take another person's life, their blood, the spilling of blood cries out to God. And here it is again, the blood of Joseph, the blood that was spilled, cries out for an accounting. We are being called to account. They know what is happening. And Joseph has manufactured this scenario in order that their guilt might be truly felt. In order that they might face up to what they have truly done. This is the grace of uncovering sin. In many ways, we don't like this, right? Can't we just leave things in the past? Can't we just hide things? Can't we just pretend? Can't we put on a nice mask? We come to church, we'll pretend to be lovely, don't we? We pretend to be lovely people, and we all smile at each other and we shine. But actually, we have all sorts of things that are hidden, all sorts of things that we think no one sees, all sorts of things that I don't want you to see about me. And I hide them and I bury them and I think no one sees, but they gnaw away at me. And the reconciliation that Joseph is going to bring is not a reconciliation that leaves sin buried in the past. It's a reconciliation that deals with it, that brings it out into the open so that it can be truly and properly dealt with. And so here they are, racked with guilt and interpreting what is happening as God's punishment on them. Okay, one final piece then. They've had to leave Simeon behind in jail. Simeon has been bound. Same idea as when Isaac, Abraham's son, was bound. The same idea. A sacrifice. Simeon is sort of the sacrifice on behalf of his brothers, the one who's now left behind in Egypt. And they make their way home. And here's the weird thing, right? On their way home, they discover that all of their silver has been given back to them. Now, if you were in a good frame of mind, right? Come on, if you were in a good frame of mind, how would you react to that? We went out for coffee on our day off this week, the Cafe Nero. And I had a voucher to get 25% off in Cafe Nero. That's good, right? It's great. We used the voucher, and it took 100% off. I have no idea why. At that point, I didn't say, oh, what is God doing to me? What is this judgment God is bringing on me? This grace that God is pouring on me? This blessing? What? I was like, terrific. Win. And yet when these brothers experience blessing and experience grace and experience Joseph giving silver back to them, do you notice they can't cope with it? You see, here's the thing, right? You can't cope with grace if you're not ready to be forgiven. Joseph deliberately moves towards them in grace, and it freaks them out, so that they say, "What is this that God has done to us?" They come back to their father and tell him everything that's happened. And they come with the food and the money. And now all of them have their silver back. And then their father, Jacob, says to them in verse 36, "You have deprived me of my children, Joseph. My children, Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And now you want to take Benjamin. Everything is against me." They are in this horrible place where even when they experience grace, it feels like a curse. Oh, hello, Reuben. Reuben's back. Let's see what Reuben's got to say this time, shall we? "You can kill both my sons if I don't bring Benjamin back alive." Come on, Reuben. This is not, killing children is not the answer to this scenario. Reuben, bless him, he keeps trying, but he stuffs it up every time. Jacob says, "No way. My son is not going down there." And so here is a family that rather than live in the freedom of grace, instead they live crippled by fear, even when they receive grace. This reminds me of a scene from my favorite musical, Les Miserables. As if you've been here for long, you'll know Les Miserables is my favorite. But one of the interesting things in Les Miserables is that Javert is a policeman. He stands for the law. He stands for what is right. Valjean is a criminal who's been shown grace. And the whole story is a clash between grace and law. And there's this beautiful scene where Valjean has the chance to kill Javert. And instead he shows him grace. He says, "I will not kill you. Even though you want to kill me, I will not kill you." And Javert cannot cope with it. He cannot receive it. I feel this like a knife within me. Grace feels like a knife to people who are not ready to receive it. Right, what do we do with all of this? This is what we do. This is why the message of forgiveness, the message of reconciliation, is so desperately needed in our world. You see, I said that Joseph towers over these chapters. Well, the reality is that Jesus towers over the whole of the Bible. Jesus towers over the whole of the story as the one who shows grace. Jesus is the one who comes with a gentleness and intention. Jesus is the one who knows the great plan that he will be exalted, and not just 11 brothers, but all the nations will bow down to him. He will be exalted, and he is working out that purpose. He is the one who weeps over our world and over sin. He is the one who does not come with vengeance and retaliation, but with grace and with mercy. And yet he comes to you and he says, "I need to show you who you truly are. You need to understand what you have done. You need sin to be uncovered in order that you can be ready to receive grace." Jesus is the one who comes to save the world, who comes to do good to the whole world. Jesus is the one who comes to bring true forgiveness. So if this afternoon you know that there is sin in your life, there is guilt in your life, that is causing you to shrink back and just hide, causing you to try and bury it, causing you to put on an act, causing you to sit in church and play a part and just look at one another, that's holding you back from truly being who God's called you to be. If you're haunted by memories of the past, if this is your experience, then the amazing news of the Bible, Jesus came for you. Jesus came for us. so that we might live in the freedom of grace, not the fear of law. This is our gospel. This is Jesus. Jesus came and took upon himself the sin that we have done, so that we could find true reconciliation. You don't have to pretend with Jesus. You don't have to hide. You don't have to be something that you're not. Instead, you come to him, and then you say, Jesus, I want to be the person you've made me to be. I want you to set me free to live a life of radical beauty in this world. Now, we've got way to go. Chapter 43 and 44, Joseph's got more work to do. We're going to see something incredible as God, by grace, transforms these brothers so that by chapter 45, they're ready for the great reconciliation. But if we're those who experience this, then we need to be those who then live this with those around us, who be like Joseph, who love those around us, not those who nurse grudges and hold bitterness, but instead those who weep and love and seek reconciliation with those around us. That's what we're going to see in the next few weeks. But the burden of my heart this afternoon is that some people here this afternoon might be set free from that crushing, fear-bringing, haunting guilt that keeps us from being what we're supposed to be. Is that you this afternoon? You don't have to hide anymore. Listen to these verses from Psalm 32. We're going to finish with this. Blessed is the one whose transgressions are forgiven. Hello, let me encourage you. Why don't you try closing your eyes if you want? This is the beauty of forgiveness. Blessed is the one whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the one whose sin the Lord does not count against them, but in his spirit is no deceit. What a blessing, forgiveness. Now listen to this. When I kept silent, this is the brothers. Think of the brothers, 20 years. When I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night, your hand was heavy on me. My strength was sapped as in the heat of summer. Then I acknowledged my sin to you and did not cover up my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. Father, many of us in this room know the reality of sin that crushes us. Perhaps behaviors that we keep returning to, things that we go back to again and again. Things that are holding us back, holding us in slavery, holding us in fear. Oh, Lord, please, we want to be set free. Set free to be the people you've called us to be. Set free to make your kingdom known to this world. Father, please, would you work in our hearts? Would you change us? Would you bring your forgiveness, we ask? In Jesus' name, amen. We're going to sing together. And I think it's important to say that some of us live with false guilt and kind of a false shame. I'm not wanting to load up a false sense of guilt and shame. I am wanting to help you to see that when Jesus sets you free, you are free. And when Jesus forgives your sin, you are forgiven. That you don't have to live your life like those brothers lived their lives. What a tragic waste of a life those brothers were, because they never confessed their sin. So we're going to sing a song that says, oh, come to the altar. Come. It may be that, you know, you've done wrong this week, right? We've all sinned this week. There's not a single person in this room who can say, oh, I've not done anything wrong. We've all sinned this week. But Jesus says, don't hide it. Don't bury it. Come. Come so that you can be the people I want you to be. Be set free by forgiveness. And Jesus towers over history and says, come and let me forgive you.